are you with Truth News Radio, and it's the 28th of June 2014. A great pleasure to be with you today. Well, in today's two-hour show, folks, I'm going to be covering a lot of ground. In the first hour, I'm going to be looking at some Australian news items. We're going to take a look at the extraordinary developments in the climate change and carbon tax arena with the most bizarre press conference held with Clive Palmer and former Vice President Al Gore in Australia last week. Bizarre, surreal, it's hard to find the correct word to describe it. I'm going to play to you the press conference and I'm going to discuss the implications of it. I'm going to give my commentary on what's really going on. I'm going to read to you from an article by Larry Pickering, which I believe goes to the heart of the matter. I think a lot of people have got this wrong. I think a lot of climate skeptics have jumped to the wrong conclusion, and I think the Greens and Labor have also jumped to the wrong conclusion. I think the reality is somewhere in between all of those views about what Clive Palmer is up to. He's a very shrewd guy, obviously very self-centered, obviously a businessman, and there's certainly some things to be concerned about that, but there's also some positives, and I want to look at the positives. I want to see what we, the people, can take from this and what the benefit might be, despite the apparent collaboration of Clive Palmer and Al Gore. I want to look at the reality behind that. I also want to look at some climate change science developments. I've got an article from joannenova.com by Dr. David Evans about imminent global cooling. Now, this is something we've heard about a lot, but Dr. Evans has done some new research and has found some very, very interesting correlations, which I'm going to run through with you today. I'm also going to be having a look at ISIS in Iraq again, and I've got a very incisive article by William Engdahl, which was published on RT.com. And in the second hour of today's show, I have a really excellent interview coming up for you with Eliza Barwick of the Citizens Electoral Council. And we're going to be talking about the world economy. We're going to be talking about Argentina. There has been a very, very serious development in Argentina in the relationship with the banks, with the IMF, and there appears to be forces at work pushing Argentina into a default scenario, which could be quite catastrophic for the world economy. And we'll also be talking about the CEC and how they understand the economy and what their position is on very fundamental philosophical questions of political philosophy. We're going to be looking at what the CEC sees as the key problems at the moment in the structure of our society's economic system and what they see as the way forward. So we have quite a lot to cover in today's show, and I hope you can stay with us for the full 2 hours. But let's begin with Al Gore and Clive Palmer. This press conference, which took place just a few days ago, appears to show Clive Palmer jumping on the bandwagon of climate alarmism and supporting an emissions trading scheme, while at the same time vowing to scrap the carbon tax. It's a very, very strange scenario, and it could only happen in today's world. It's so illustrative of how messed up our world is today, that the messages are so confused, they're so contradictory. One always reaches for that word Orwellian in such cases, but Orwellian always implies that there is a big brother kind of guiding it and controlling it. But this is kind of more surreal. It's more it's more out of control. I call it Kafkaesque. Of course, Franz Kafka was the very famous Eastern European writer who wrote about very disturbed mental states that were also reflective of bloated bureaucracies and paranoia and the inability of people to communicate effectively with each other. Very interesting writer, and I do recommend reading Kafka's work. I think it will actually help, and people always talk about George Orwell, but you have to understand Kafka to understand the world today. Of course, one of his most famous books, which I've just been reading, is The Trial, which is a harrowing story of paranoia about a man who is charged with a crime, but he's never told what the crime is. And the whole story of the book is him trying to clear his name, but he can never find out what he's been charged with. But this is the kind of paradoxical, nonsensical world of modern bureaucracies and modern civilization. So similarly, we have in climate change paranoia, certainly paranoia. I mean, there's this terrible fear of some impending catastrophe. And we have all of these measures that are put forward that don't seem to really have anything to do with actually solving that problem, even if the problem were real. And then we have people coming, like Clive Palmer, coming forward and saying he doesn't believe that CO2 from human beings is significant. He said that very clearly. He said that CO2 from natural causes is far more important than CO2 from human beings. But then suddenly we have him standing up and saying he supports an emissions trading scheme. So anyway, let's play to you now from the live press interview between Al Gore and Clive Palmer in Canberra.
Vice President Gore, members of Parliament, senators and friends, I'd like to welcome Vice President Gore to Canberra and thank him for the productive discussions we've held today. My discussions enabled me to reconsider important issues facing all Australians and the rest of the world. Many would say that the United States of America was the loser by Vice President Gore not serving as President of the Great Republic. The world was the beneficiary of the courage and the leadership that he has shown. History tells us it's not the position that makes a leader, it's his actions and his examples, which others can follow. Others that may be less capable like me, but can see the light shining out of the darkness. Vice President Gore is a great leader, and we're fortunate to have him here today. The world is constantly changing, and our ability to adapt to change, to keep an open mind on issues which affect all of us, is what really matters. It's not the Labor way or the Liberal way, it's the right way that's important for Australia and important for the world. True to our promises to the Australian people at the last election, Palm United senators will vote in the Senate to abolish the carbon tax. In doing so, Palm United senators will move an amendment, and that amendment will ensure that the removal of the carbon tax requires that all producers of energy in this country are required by law, not by choice, to pass on to all consumers of energy the savings from the repeal of the carbon tax. I expect that all senators from all parties will support this amendment.
Let me just pause it there. I want to focus on this point. It's extremely important. Clive Palmer is determined to push through the repeal of the carbon tax, and he also is determined to pass a law that will force the energy companies to pass those savings back to the average Australian. Very, very important point. Hold that in your mind as we go forward.
Action by our senators will make Australian industries more competitive internationally and the lives of our people more manageable. The carbon tax is an arbitrary tax, and it sets a price on carbon at a level far above the international price for carbon. In so doing, it disadvantages Australians, and that's why it should be repealed. The government response to climate change, as the Prime Minister has outlined, is to tackle the problem, which he has acknowledged, by direct action. Direct action is a waste of money. At a time when families, pensioners, young Australians, stay-at-home mums and single parents, our Indigenous communities are facing unfair measures in the budget. To increase excise and indexation is not the answer. If New Zealand can join the international community, why can't Australia? Australia acting alone...
Okay, let me just pause it again. Second point to keep firmly in your mind is that Clive Palmer is putting the kibosh on Liberals' direct action policy. This was the policy that Tony Abbott came up with to counteract the criticisms that he didn't care about climate change. And remember, Clive Palmer has the balance of power in the Senate, and Clive Palmer can shoot down that legislation. So on the one hand, we've got Clive Palmer forcing the return of the savings to the average person. That, again, goes beyond what Tony Abbott had committed to. We've got him determined to push through the repeal of the tax, and we've got him also now determined to quash Tony Abbott's direct action policy. So this sets the stage for what's to come, but don't forget it. It's very important.
And cannot change the world. And change the world we must, not just for ourselves but for our children, not just for them but for all the children of the world, not just for our time but for all time. For time waits for no man, and the challenges we face are not easy, but face them we must, and face them we can together. Climate change is a global problem, and it must have a global solution. Air moves around the world. Many countries fail to act because they're unsure how the issue will be dealt with by other nations. Australia has got an opportunity to set a standard which can act as a catalyst for the whole world, to set a fair framework which the world can follow. In understanding climate change, we must remain ever vigilant and be aware of how Australia, as part of the international community, is doing, and more importantly, what the global community can do together to make the lives of all those who inhabit this planet more secure. Together, we can achieve the extraordinary. As President Obama and the United States has shown great leadership in encouraging all countries to act, Australia needs to do its fair share. In voting against the abolition of the Climate Change Authority, Palmer United senators will move...
Okay, now here comes the little carrots that are being offered to the Greens to appease them. Well, we've had the bloated speech there about how we've all got to do our part, and that looked like it was just written by a scriptwriter and handed to him the way he read it. It seemed that there was no passion, no intensity in what he said. He was just reading a script. Now he's handing out the carrots to the Greens. We're going to block the abolition of the Climate Commission and various things to make you guys feel a little bit better about what we're actually doing, which is completely shafting you. Here we go.
Move an amendment to establish an emissions trading scheme. This scheme would only become effective once Australia's main trading partners also take action to establish such a scheme. This measure cannot be defined as a financial measure. It will have a carbon price zero rated. At a future time, the government or parliament will have the ability to set the financial parameters of the scheme. These should be set based upon the actions of our leading trading partners, China, the United States of America, the European Union, Japan and Korea.
One last point to point out before we go to break. Carbon price to be set at zero. Carbon price to be set at zero, folks. We are going to break. You with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking today about the extraordinary developments in Australian federal politics with Clive Palmer, leader of the Palmer United Party, coming forward apparently to endorse an emissions trading scheme. But I've been running through his press conference, which he held jointly with visiting Vice President Al Gore, And I've been highlighting the extraordinary contradictory nature of what he has been saying. And the last point there being that, yes, he wants to bring in an emissions trading scheme, but he wants the carbon price set to zero, and he doesn't want the emissions trading scheme, in other words, to be effective at all, unless and until Australia's major trading partners all adopt the same scheme. And he referred to a whole lot of countries there, you know, the US, the EU, China, most of the world, in fact. So he's basically saying Australia's not is going to do diddly squat unless the rest of the world does something first. And he's also, as I said, shafting the Greens, but holding a carrot out to them at the same time. Now, it may seem as if I'm being very critical of him in saying this. I'm actually in approval of what he's doing. I think it's being done for extremely selfish reasons. I think he's a businessman. I think that there's profit motive in what he's doing, but I think there is some payoff for us. I think we are getting some payoff. I think Clive is actually less dishonest than any other politician I've seen, although he is dishonest. He's very dishonest. What he's doing there up on the stage in Canberra at the press club there is totally dishonest, but he's kind of doing it with a nudge and a wink. I mean, it's like, yes, he's lying, but he's winking to you at the same time. It's so obvious. So let's just continue now with the live press conference here.
We need to ensure that the jobs and enterprises are all Australians can remain competitive. If this amendment is supported and passed by the government, the world will know that once they act, they can be sure that Australia will respond in like terms. As John F. Kennedy said many years ago, for in the final analysis, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this one small planet, we all breathe the same air, and we all cherish our children's values, futures, and we all are mortal. When truth triumphs over injustice, everyone is the winner. And the inconvenient truth is the truth that we must face together. There can be no justification at any time for closing an enterprise when it's profitable and providing income and jobs for Australians. This is more so when that enterprise is, by its very efforts, providing a better solution for the environment. Palm United senators will vote against the abolition of the Clean Energy Finance Corporation. The Prime Minister promised the Australian people prior to the last election that Australia would retain its renewable energy targets. Now, like many other promises, he seeks to break this one. The renewable energy target in 2020, too many politicians make promises before elections only to break them after elections. Public service should be the highest calling. We have to hold our politicians to their word, or our system of democracy and all that it stands for will break down. The Palm United Party's role in the Senate is to keep faith with the Australian people. We will therefore not support any change to the renewable energy targets before the 2016, after the next election. Listening is one of the most important things we can do. By listening, we can learn from others and we can make changes before changes change us. I want to thank the Vice President for coming to Canberra today. I want to thank him for his discussions. As Australians, we must put the interest of our people before our own individual interests and the interests of all people of the world ahead of all else. As it's been said, we all need to have an open mind. This is called for by the need for better mutual understanding and better mutual respect. An open mind will enable us to have an objective and realistic understanding of each other. We cannot have a common... We cannot only discover what divides us, but what we have in common and what we can agree on. We have more in common in the common future that we all share on this planet than anything else. At least we can see to it that our differences will not result in clashes or confrontation. An open mind will also enable us to be more appreciative and accommodative and supportive of each other and our concerns and our priorities. Despite all the talk about climate change in the world, we are still in a developing world with such huge populations and still face very serious problems of an unbalanced development, poverty and environmental degradation. We seek a better world for Australia, for all its citizens of the world, so that one day man can be what he was meant to be, free and independent. I'd like to now introduce...
Okay, that was mostly waffle. He clearly is rejecting the most important part of the Labor Party's legislation, which is the carbon tax. He now goes on to introduce Vice President Al Gore, who does a lot more waffling, but I know our US listeners will be interested, so here we go.
Vice President Gore to make a few comments. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Clive. I want to thank Clive Palmer for the statements he's just made, for his kind words. Personally, I want to acknowledge Senator-elect Glenn Lazarus. And I'd like to make just a few comments about what you've just heard and about this extraordinary moment in which Australia, the United States, and the rest of the world is finally beginning to confront the climate crisis in a meaningful way. The United States, earlier this month, saw a dramatic move by President Obama to require a 30% reduction in carbon emissions, reductions that will, for the most part, be accomplished by individual states and regions in my country through an emissions trading system. We have also seen the nation of China implement a cap and trade system in two provinces and five cities. And we heard an announcement last week by a high official that these pilots will serve as the basis for a nationwide cap and trade system in China within the next few years. We have also seen, just within the last month, the election of a new prime minister in India, with Prime Minister Modi.
Let me just pause it there. The cap and trade system in China is purely token. It is a few cities in China. China is a massive industrial engine. There are coal plants being built every week in China. The idea that China is getting on board with emissions reductions is pure smokescreen. And I'd just like to point out, Al Gore is a con man. To some extent, so is Clive Palmer. I mean, they're both just guys who are very rich, who are trying to get richer. Palmer, of course, is richer than Al Gore. Palmer sits on this billions of dollars of wealth from the mining sector. But Al Gore is no slouch either in that area. I mean, he's got a lot of money. These guys just want to make money. They're quite happy to lie to people. Al Gore is by far the worst in this case. He's a very, very wicked man. What he's done is unforgivable and criminal in nature. With Clive Palmer, I see it being more as, well, he's a shifty guy, but we're getting some benefits from it, so let's see how we go with it. Anyway, we'll just continue to the end of this press conference.
Modi announcing on his first day in office a stunning initiative to provide electricity to the 400 million Indians who do not now have it by principally relying on photovoltaic energy. All of these developments add up to the world moving to solve the climate crisis. And that is why it is so significant that Clive Palmer has announced that his party will support the continuation of the renewable energy target and the continuation of the Clean Energy Finance Corporation and the continuation of the Climate Change Authority, and that he has announced as well that he and his party will fight to re-implement an ETS under the...
Okay, we'll leave it there. With Truth News Radio Australia, that was Clive Palmer and Vice President Al Gore at a press conference in Canberra earlier this week. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Thank you. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting to you on the Logos Radio Network and through the internet and blogosphere. And I would like to extend an invitation to you, dear listener, today to join us in our quest, join us in our struggle, join us in our effort to change the world by telling the truth. And the way in which you can join us and make a very, very significant difference to the world and help us and thereby help yourself and your children and all of humanity is to become a subscriber to Truth News Radio Australia. Why is that so? Why does becoming a subscriber to Truth News Radio Australia serve humanity? I mean, I don't claim to be doing anything particularly brilliant on this show. I never intended to do a radio show. It wasn't part of my plan. I do a lot of work in IT. I'm very interested in music. I had never planned to do a radio show, but it was forced upon me. I would like to do more than simply a radio show. That's all I can afford to do. It's all I'm able to do with the funds and resources I have. But the point here is that it was thrust upon me because I saw a world coming apart at the seams, and I saw media organizations that are just dedicated to lying to you, dedicated to selling you lies, to sell you things, to fund wars, to poison you. You know, they're lying to you so they can poison you and all these different things. I had to do the show. I had no choice. There was no one else to do it. And there still really isn't any other show in Australia that seeks to do what I'm doing. So I have to keep doing it. But I've been funding it out of my own pocket for 5-6 years now. And I've practically gone broke. I mean, it's just been incredibly expensive. I've spent months simply working on parts of the website, getting the e-commerce platform up because my PayPal account was frozen. As soon as I tried to open a PayPal account, it was frozen. I had to build my own payment gateway. The amount of time it takes to simply manage the website and do the shows and help organize interviews is incredible. Other aspects to it that have had a huge impact on my life have been the fact that I can't get a job in a major company anymore. I mean, I had been working for some big players in the digital IT development world, but these days, folks, when you try to get a job, any company that's large enough to have an HR department will immediately check you out on Google. They'll see, oh, who is this guy? They'll try to find out more about you. They'll do a bit of intel. Now, anyone with a profile like mine simply isn't going to get hired. It's that simple. It's absolutely true. I guarantee you it's true. They have these people in HR departments in large companies that just sit down and check you out. Ooh, oh, what, he said that about 9/11? Ooh, he's against vaccines? Oh, my goodness. Well, we can't be hiring him. Oh, he's some sort of political guy. It's total censorship. It's totally evil and totalitarian. It's wicked beyond imagination. This is what happens. So people like me who decide to go out on a limb and do a show like this can no longer earn a proper living. So, again, I don't want you to have sympathy. I simply want you to understand the situation. Because really, the reason why I want you to subscribe to Truth News Radio Australia is not out of sympathy for me. It's because you want to see some change in the world. And that's what I'm doing, and that's what I intend to keep doing. So I'll keep making these little promos during my show, and we'll see how we go. Currently, I've got 7 subscribers. That's after about 3 weeks of trying to get some subscriptions up. I've got 7 subscribers. It's certainly a lot lower than what I was hoping for at this stage. We'll see how we go. I'm not going to give up. Let's continue now with the next very important story that I want to bring to you. David Evans, a former climate council scientist in Australia, has done some unique research, and he's got an article up here on joannenova.com.au. Global cooling is imminent. If the sun mainly controls the temperature on Earth, a turning point is almost upon us. In the second part of this series of blog posts, we will demonstrate that carbon dioxide is responsible for less than 25% of the global warming of the last six decades. So presumably the sun is mainly responsible. Why it's going to cool? The reason for the cooling is the dramatic fall in solar radiation that started around 2004. Here is a graph of solar radiation since 1610, when sunspots were first recorded. The brown line is the solar radiation, and it peaks every 11 years or so because of the sunspot cycle. We put an 11-year smoother through it to give us the red line, which shows the trends in solar radiation. And just describing to you the graph here that he's posted, the red line is plummeting downwards from about 1998. It's a downward line, not looking too good. There have been three big steep falls in solar radiation in the last 400 years. The first was in the 1600s. It led to the depths of the Little Ice Age and the Maunder Minimum. This was the coldest period during the last 400 years. There used to be fairs on the ice in the Thames River in London because it would freeze over for weeks at a time. The second fall is around the time of Napoleon, and it preceded the second coldest period in the last 400 years, called the Dalton Minimum. The third fall occurred recently, starting in about 2004. This recent fall is as big as the fall in Napoleon's time, almost as large as the fall in the 1600s, and it seems to be steeper than either of those falls. But the temperature hasn't fallen yet. The timing for the cooling is indicated by the delay, which was deduced from the observed notch, but has been independently corroborated to varying extents several times in the last decade. The delay is most likely 11 years, though definitely between 10 and 20 years. 11 years after 2004 is 2015, suggesting the cooling will start in 2015. However, 11 years is only the average delay, and the physical interpretation of the delay suggests the delay is actually the length of the solar cycle, which has varied from 8 to 14 years, but averages 10 years. The current solar cycle is a long one, probably running around 13 years. So the date that he comes up with for the temperature drop should be 2017. The delay could be as much as 20 years, in which case the drop could be as late as 2024, or it could occur as soon as 2014. An El Niño or a La Niña could affect the timing too. At this stage, we don't know. But by the end of 2018, seems fairly likely. How much cooling and how quickly? For that, we turn to the notch delay solar model, which hindcasts the last 240 years of temperatures reasonably well, simply from the solar irradiance. The changes in solar irradiation are tiny and have an almost insignificant immediate effect on the Earth's temperatures. However, the physical interpretation of the notch and delay show that these little changes foretell the changes in a newly detected climate influence from the sun, which we are calling Force X. The effect on temperatures of changes in Force X is 10 to 20 times as great as the immediate effect of changes in solar radiation. Anyway, this is getting a little technical here, and I probably don't have time to read to you more from the article. I will put it up on the website. The main point is that this research, and believe me, Dr. Evans is the real deal. He's the real McCoy. Of course, people will say it hasn't been published in a peer-reviewed journal, therefore it cannot be taken seriously. Of course they'll say that. But of course, we know what happens with the peer-reviewed journals. You simply can't publish this type of stuff. And if you do, the meta-publisher, like the owners of the publication, are likely to quash the entire publication. This has happened. Entire magazines have been quashed because someone published a global warming skeptic article. We're going to break. Don't go away. Important show. Welcome back, you with Truth News Radio Australia. Well, we've been covering some climate change news today, and it's very interesting stuff, a very, very incredible time in history, what's going on. Both the scientific research, both the controversies, the debates, the lies, the cover-ups, the strange behaviour from people like Clive Palmer. I'd like to draw your attention to a very interesting, well-written article by Larry Pickering, the famous cartoonist, who actually has a very big following on the internet. And of course, Pickering was one of the most savage in the attack against Julia Gillard over her corrupt behaviour, and I totally applaud what he did there. He's a satirist, basically, but he's also a very good writer. There's an article up on here on his website, How Much Does It Cost to Dance with the Devil? And he goes through highlighting all of the points that I brought up to you as we were playing the press conference. And just a kind of a joke here, will Penny Wong and Fred Nile be calling a joint press conference today? I mean, this is how ludicrous the faux partnership there of Palmer and Al Gore is. So I'll leave that to you to check out on the internet. I now need to move to another very important story. And this is an article from William Engdahl, an excellent writer and a man that I do intend to get on this show one day. He's written some superb books, Seeds of Destruction, a number of others whose titles escapes me, but he's written about GMOs, the threat to global agriculture, the superpowers and the geopolitical hegemony of the US empire. Very astute writer. He has an article up on RT.com. ISIS in Iraq stinks of CIA-NATO dirty war op. For days now, since their dramatic June 10 taking of Mosul, Western mainstream media have been filled with horror stories of the military conquest in Iraq of the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, with a curious acronym, ISIS. ISIS, as in the ancient Egyptian cult of the goddess of fertility and magic. The immediate picture being presented adds up less and less. Details leaking out suggest that ISIS and the major military surge in Iraq, and less so in neighbouring Syria, is being shaped and controlled out of Langley, Virginia, and other CIA and Pentagon outposts, as the next stage in spreading chaos in the world's second largest oil state, Iraq, as well as weakening the recent Syrian stabilisation efforts. Strange facts. The very details of the ISIS military success in the key Iraqi oil centre Mosul are suspect. According to well-informed Iraqi journalists, ISIS overran the strategic Mosul region, site of some of the world's most prolific oil fields, with barely a shot fired in resistance. According to one report, residents of Tikrit reported remarkable displays of soldiers handing over their weapons and uniforms peacefully to militants who ordinarily would have been expected to kill government soldiers on the spot. We are told that ISIS-masked psychopaths captured arms and ammunition from the fleeing security forces, arms and ammunition supplied by the American government. The offensive coincides with a successful campaign by ISIS in eastern Syria. According to Iraqi journalists, Sunni tribal chiefs in the region had been convinced to side with ISIS against the Shiite al-Maliki government in Baghdad. They were promised a better deal under ISIS, Sunni Sharia, than with Baghdad anti-Sunni rule. According to the New York Times, the mastermind behind the ISIS military success is former Ba'ath party head and Saddam Hussein's successor, General Ibrahim al-Duri. Duri is reportedly the head of the rebel group Army of the Men of Naqshbandi Order, as well as the Supreme Command for Jihad and Liberation, based on his long-standing positions of leadership in the Naqshbandi sect in Iraq. In 2009, US-Iraqi Surge General David Petraeus, at the time heading the US Central Command, claimed to reporters that Duri was in Syria. Iraqi parliamentarians claimed he was in Qatar. The curious fact is that despite being on the US Most Wanted list since 2003, Duri has miraculously managed to avoid capture and now to return with a vengeance to retake a huge parts of Sunni Iraq. Luck or well-placed friends in Washington? Key members of ISIS, it now emerged, were trained by US CIA and Special Forces Command at a secret camp in Jordan in 2012. According to informed Jordanian officials, the US, Turkish and Jordanian intelligence were running a training base for Syrian rebels in the Jordanian town of Safawi in the country's northern desert region, conveniently near to the borders of both Syria and Iraq. Well, look, I won't read to you more from that. I will post that on the website as well. This reinforces what I said in last week's show, and that was pretty much my gut feeling. But I've often found with my gut feeling, you just wait a bit and it pretty well tends to get supported. I'm not saying I'm a genius. I'm just saying, you know, my gut feeling tends to be based on what is most predictable, what is the most typical scenario. Looking at the ISIS insurgency, it had the smell and the feel of a foreign-run op, just another arm of the long-standing and very boring CIA tendencies, operations to influence and control those who actually are their alleged enemies. But of course, in doing so, they can use them against other enemies. They can redeploy them to fight other enemies. The history of this goes back decades. It probably goes back thousands of years. I don't really know. But I do know it goes back to the whole post-war period when the precursor of the CIA in Europe after the defeat of the Nazis, Operation Gladio, where they were setting up fascists who were, of course, the enemy, the newly defeated enemy. They were setting up fascists in Europe and they were using them to fight against communism, to fight against the Soviets. They were using them as bogeymen that they could call upon to justify control, the strategy of tension, as it was called in Italy. The terrorists of Europe of the 60s, 70s and early 80s were operated and controlled by the CIA, ladies and gentlemen. There's nothing new in this. So whenever you see some news about some new terrorist insurgency, don't do what most people do and think, oh, it's really the people fighting back. Yes, finally the people in Iraq are standing up against the colonials, standing up against the empire. No. The people are crushed. The people are totally downtrodden. They don't have the ability to stand up, folks. This is a reality. That's the myth. That's the meme they're trying to put into your head, that the people are doing something and then, oh, they're so evil though. So the people who actually stand up for themselves and fight against the vicious, brutal military invasion of Iraq are actually evil, evil folks. So it justifies the conflation of the idea that anyone who stands up against tyranny is evil, right? The evil is what the media is telling you. The evil is what the CIA is doing. The evil is the creation of these evil organizations like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, who are just franchises of the CIA, paid with a lot of money, and there's plenty of psychopaths in the world that you can recruit to doing your bidding. A lot of them are just nuts. A lot of them have serious personality disorders, and they're all manipulated. They're all weak in some way. They can all be controlled through money, through power, through influence. So that is enough of that. We are now almost at the end of the hour, and in the second hour, let me remind you, we have a very important interview coming up with Eliza Barwick of the Citizens Electoral Council. I've had Craig Isherwood, the leader of the CEC, on the show several times. We always have very interesting discussions. Today, we're going to be focusing on economic issues, and I'm going to probe into really the underlying philosophical questions in the show coming up. I know that the CEC has a position which certainly can't be called libertarian, but it's not Fabian socialist either. They seem to be somewhere in the middle. They certainly pay a lot of lip service to the US Constitution, but you can't really call them constitutionalists when they're operating in Australia, because our Constitution doesn't really have much in common with the US Constitution. But in a US sense, you could call them constitutionalists. Now, for our US listeners who may have no idea who the CEC are, I should point out that they are deeply connected and influenced by Lyndon LaRouche, of course, who is very well known in the US. He's an American. And the CEC regularly provides a platform for Lyndon LaRouche to write articles and make statements. But at the same time, they do have their own very unique kind of take on things, and they do seem to have some very, very smart people working for them. So, as I say, and as I've said many times before, I am not a political agitator. I am not a political activist. I am a political agnostic. You could even call me a political atheist. I lean towards libertarian thought. I'm very concerned about the bloated power of government and the sick and murky relationship between government and very, very large corporations, which has developed to such an extent that you can't really differentiate the two. They have to be talked as one unit, the government corporate matrix. The CEC seems to have a bit more endorsement of government regulation than I do, but this is something we'll be getting into in the next hour. So do stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we'll be back right after this ad break for hour two of today's show with Eliza Barwick. Don't go away.